a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for tuning into another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. We have Leslie Nielsen making a special guest appearance on the program today. There you go. Also coming up on today's program, we're going to talk with Chuck Michelle, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, about a big court victory out in Los Angeles, as well as a fascinating book written by one of the co-founders of a big gun control organization, big not necessarily in terms of the number of members, but in terms of the influence that it has had over the decades, who has changed his mind and changed his heart and is now actively supporting the Second Amendment. We'll talk about that coming up in just a matter of moments. But before we get to our first interview today, I do want to get to a couple of headlines. First of all, on Tuesday, February 11th, and today is crossover day in the Virginia legislature, and that means that bills have to get out of their house of origin. So House bills have to pass out of the House. Senate bills have to pass out of the Senate. Right now, we are paying close attention to House Bill 961. That is Governor Ralph Northam's gun ban, magazine ban, suppressor ban, trigger activator ban. This has been modified in committee. It has been watered down to try to get the approval of some Democrat House members. It is expected that it's going to be watered down on the floor of the House even more, reducing the penalty for continuing to possess a magazine that can hold more than 12 rounds from a felony down to a misdemeanor. Doesn't matter. Still a crime under this bill to continue to possess one of the most commonly possessed items that gun owners have, magazines that can hold more than 12 rounds or magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds, which was the original legislation. It has become crystal clear that Governor Ralph Northam wants to be able to say he signed a gun ban. And it doesn't really matter what the details are as long as he can say he signed a gun ban and he was able to get what he wanted. In terms of being able to, add more prohibitions to make it illegal to continue to possess these magazines, look, Democrats in Virginia feel like they can always come back for more next year. The important thing for the anti-gun leadership in the Virginia legislature and in the governor's office right now is to get some form of this legislation on the books, and then they can go back and they can tweak it at the expense of your rights. So, this is going to pass out of the House, likely will pass out of the House today. It's not a done deal. It's not guaranteed. We spoke with Dave Adams yesterday, the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. He expected that this would pass probably 50-48 and then head over to the state Senate side, where we've had four Democrat state senators who've said, listen, we're not on board with any gun ban. We're not on board with taking away things that people own. If, on the other hand, this bill gets watered down any further, and let's say that magazine ban drops from a felony down to misdemeanor and then down to, well, okay, you will grandfather in those existing owners of magazines. My concern is that some of these Democrat state senators are going to say, all right, well, look, this doesn't impact anybody's guns that they own now. It only impacts people going forward. So that's something we can go ahead and get on board with. This still turns a right into a privilege. All right. This is still the state of Virginia saying, listen, we don't think you have a right to own these guns that we call assault weapons. We don't think that you have a right to own magazines over 12 rounds. We don't think you have a right to own a suppressor. But we're going to let you keep them for now under the terms of this legislation. That's why House Bill 961 is completely unacceptable. It doesn't matter how many grandfather clauses they throw in there. It still turns a right, the right to own the most commonly produced rifles in America today, the right to own the most commonly owned magazines in America today. It turns that right to keep and bear arms into a privilege to be doled out by the state of Virginia, and it is completely and utterly unacceptable. All right? Now, we've also got news from Michael Bloomberg. New poll out showing Michael Bloomberg, this is a Morning Consult poll, in third place, right behind Joe Biden and about 7 or 8 points behind Bernie Sanders. This is a Bloomberg surge that we've seen in some polling. And as Biden has sort of cratered in his support, Bloomberg's support appears to be going up. Well, a Bernie Sanders supporter, Benjamin Dixon, a podcaster, Discovered audio last night. The gun owners, you may have already known about this. I actually wrote about this back in December for Bearing Arms, and gun owners have known about this for several years. But now the broader audience of voters and Democrat primary voters are discovering the speech that Michael Bloomberg gave at the Aspen Institute in 2015, in which, well, here's what Benjamin Dixon said, in which he explained that you can quote just Xerox copy the description of male minorities between the ages of 16 and 25, hand them over to cops. And that's who police need to be going after. He also, in that same speech, talked about disarming young minority men between the ages of 15 and 25, said that one way to do that is to throw them up against the wall and frisk them. And so finally, the attitude and the policies, not even the comments, but the policies of Michael Bloomberg are now getting called into question. But here's the thing. These gun control advocates, I assume that Mike Dixon, as a Bernie Sanders supporter, also in favor of all kinds of gun control laws. I want these folks on the left who are ticked off at discovering Michael Bloomberg's comments to understand this is what they support when they back additional gun control laws. This is how they get enforced. We're going to see this in Virginia, too. We're going to see a disproportionate impact against young minority men in places like Richmond and Virginia Beach and Petersburg, Virginia. And gun control advocates are okay with that. They don't ever have a problem with any of their policies having a disparate impact on young minorities. That's fine. Michael Bloomberg, pretty proud of that fact, as a matter of fact, until he decided to run for president a few years later after making those comments. All right. Oh, now let's get to our conversation with Chuck Michelle, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, who joined me to talk about the latest court victory out in California, where a judge has granted a permanent injunction against the city of Los Angeles over their blacklist of businesses doing business or supporting the National Rifle Association. Take a look and a listen. Hey, Chuck, thanks so much for coming to the program today. It's good talking with you.
Always a pleasure, Cam.
I appreciate you getting up a little early on the West Coast, but we've got some good news to report on. You know, we've seen these attacks on gun owners, not just their Second Amendment rights, but you in California have been dealing with the attack on the First Amendment rights of gun owners, everything from going after gun shows to what we've seen from Los Angeles. They tried to put in place a policy that basically, if you wanted to do business with the city of Los Angeles, what you had to detail any sort of relationship that you might have with the NRA. Is that right?
Right. You had to disclose essentially the fact that you supported the NRA, either through donation or membership or sponsorship or offering some kind of a promotional deal. You had to disclose that to the city of LA. And obviously, once you did, that was basically the way the city of LA was going to not use you. So a contractor that wants to get put in a request for proposal, you know, a bid basically to get a job with LA and discloses he likes the National Rifle Association isn't going to get the job with LA. It was a blacklist essentially. And it's been part of, candidly, a movement, not a movement, but a trend, folks led by New York State Cuomo and San Francisco and some other cities to try and demonize anybody and try and frankly scare anybody who believes in the NRA into dropping any support for the NRA. So even these groups, like, you know, when you get a discount from FedEx or whatever, these politicians want to try and discourage all those companies or individuals from showing that kind of support for the NRA by threatening their livelihood.
And so when the city of Los Angeles put this policy in place, you all sued, you took them to court. And as I understand it, you guys have a big victory now.
Right. We got a great win. Actually, there's been a series of wins here. When we first sued them, we asked for a preliminary injunction, and that's the process you have to go through as you seek a permanent injunction and a final judgment at the end of the case. But to start, you ask for a preliminary injunction that that stops the city from enforcing this law. And in December of 2019, we got a ruling from the federal district court granting us that preliminary injunction that we had requested. That was huge because the language that the judge used, the reasoning that he laid out in his order was just so emphatic that the city not only stopped enforcing the ordinance, but then ultimately went to repeal it because they knew that there was just no way that they could win this thing once they were essentially educated by the judge. So that was win number two when they repealed it. And then most recently we got win number three, which was the final judgment and a permanent injunction, turning the preliminary injunction, a temporary preliminary injunction, into a permanent final judgment of permanent injunction that stops the city from reenacting or trying to enforce an ordinance like the one that we've successfully knocked out.
Do you think, I mean, you talk about this being part of a strategy and not just limited to Los Angeles. I mean, one of the things that we've seen around the country is, you know, when gun control activists, for instance, you know, when they attack firearms preemption laws and they put in place these local ordinances that clearly violate state law, they get smacked down by the courts, but it doesn't stop them from doing it somewhere else, right? So, you know, the Supreme Court of Montana can strike down a local background check ordinance, but the mayor of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, still goes ahead and signs these local gun control ordinances, even though they know that these are going to get struck down in court. Do you anticipate that despite what this judge had to say and despite the city of Los Angeles having to cave and repeal this ordinance and, you know, being told that they were wrong, do you anticipate that other cities, though, are still going to try to take some of these steps to demonize the NRA and its members and to, you know, put this sort of blacklist in place?
Probably so, but they won't do it as an ordinance. This was in Los Angeles. This was actually an ordinance. It was a law. And so it was, in a sense, it was easier to challenge since it took that form. If a city just passes a resolution or some politician gets on a soapbox and says, hey, don't do business with the NRA, don't mm-hmm. support the NRA, don't give the NRA any deal, that's harder to challenge. But we see that all the time. I mean, this is all part of the effort. Bloomberg and his public relations professionals published a manifesto on basically how to shame people into not owning guns. And part of it was demonize the NRA and the NRA leadership and try and turn the NRA membership against the NRA leadership and thereby diminish the NRA. So it's because NRA is so, you know, it's the 800-pound gorilla in the gun rights fight. They know that if they diminish the NRA, they can, and if they scare people, and demonize people and launch this campaign of shame against people so that they are afraid to be vocal about their support for the right to choose to own a firearm to defend your family or for sport, that less people will get involved in the sport, less people will discover how much fun it is to go shooting, less people will stand up for their right to choose to own a gun for self-defense, and less people will be politically active and resist the efforts that the gun ban lobby puts in place to accomplish their agenda. So this is really, it's about murdering the gun culture. It's about stopping people from choosing to support, to experience firearms and choosing to support the right that goes along with the Second Amendment so that they can essentially eliminate it.
You know, and to that end, I mean, I think we are seeing gun owners respond to this around the country. You know, here in Virginia, we've seen the rise of the Second Amendment sanctuary movement, where I think 91 of the state's 95 counties, you've got dozens of cities and towns that have, you know, passed these resolutions saying hands off of our Second Amendment. We're not going to enforce any unconstitutional gun laws. I do think that gun owners are waking up. Maybe, you know, we've hit the snooze button a couple of times, but I think that we are starting to wake up to this threat that, as you say, is it's beyond just litigation or legislation, right? It's a and gun owners have known that we've been engaged in the culture war for decades, but the cultural side of things, I think, are really starting to heat up as Bloomberg and his anti-gun groups are dedicated to spending millions of dollars, not just influencing lawmakers, but as you say, influencing gun owners, right? Trying to get them to shut up, trying to make it dangerous for your employment or for your livelihood if you become a Second Amendment advocate. And I do think we're starting to see some pushback to that.
I agree. We are, and you know, this is the battle against gun owners is, and the First Amendment, and gun owners standing up and using their First Amendment rights to push back. It's, you know, we see this when a conservative speaker wants to go speak at Berkeley, and they try and block the speaker. I mean, there's a censorship movement, an anti-First Amendment censorship movement going on, pushed by progressives against any conservative or libertarian message. And in the case of gun owners, I mean, gun ownership, the Second Amendment is the tip of the spear for freedom in this country, really. All the other rights depend ultimately on the Second Amendment. And so I'm very, very thankful that, like, Virginia is the very, very obvious example of sanctuary cities. But we even have a sanctuary city in California, Needles.
Yep.
Stood up and said, we've had enough. So the folks that are pushing this censorship movement really are not recognizing that there's people who don't agree with you. They may not be in Los Angeles or San Francisco predominantly, but there's an awful lot of municipalities, and there's an awful lot of people who don't agree with that agenda and are pushing back. I'm thrilled to see that stuff going on in Virginia. I mean, that's really taken on a momentum, and I think they're making a very powerful statement there. We'll see if it's enough to stop the politicians from pushing the baloney that they're pushing in Virginia. And we're also doing what we can to get more cities to come on board in California and throughout the country. So, yeah, but in Virginia in particular right now, it's sort of the example that we'd like everybody else to follow. Really, folks are waking up. They are getting together. They are making their voices heard. They're standing up for gun ownership pride, which is really, you know, gun pride. That's what this is about. You refuse to be demonized. You refuse to be put in the closet, so to speak. When it comes to Second Amendment rights.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we're standing up for the exercise of a constitutional right. This is a civil rights issue, and we're on the side of protecting this civil right. You know, as opposed to those folks who want to strip our civil rights away, turn them into privileges, and you know, regulate and decide for themselves who gets to keep and bear arms. And we've seen this. You know, we're seeing this in California. I mean, you've been fighting this fight for decades. Just look at the fight over the right to carry that continues in California, where, you know, so many of these counties, the issuing authority says we're going to pick and choose. Who we believe has a good enough reason to exercise this constitutional right. And we've seen the abuse that's taken place as a result of that. And I know that this fight continues. And, you know, I wish, Chuck, that, you know, we could point to a future Supreme Court decision and say, look, this is the case that's going to solve everything for us and our rights are going to be secure forever. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that this fight has been going on longer than I've been alive. It'll continue long after I'm gone and you're gone. But it's a fight that we cannot afford to lose. We have to stay engaged. We have to be involved. Otherwise, these rights will simply disappear.
Exactly. And you know, I can't help but note how ironic it is, in the sense that the First Amendment is now coming to the aid of the Second Amendment. I think maybe the founders envisioned the Second Amendment as sort of a doomsday remedy. But in this case, Los Angeles is the most recent example, but they try to ban gun shows out here where firearms owners assemble, and we use the First Amendment to knock that law out. So the right of folks to speak. It's also ironic in that this is supposed to be the progressives, you know, pride and joy, the First Amendment. And they're rejecting that. They're rejecting a civil liberty that they for years have bragged about, the First Amendment, in favor of advancing what's really an oppressive of the agenda when it comes to the Second Amendment. But the First Amendment, we're using it to fight back and winning.
Absolutely. Talking again with Chuck Michel, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. I want to ask you about a book, Chuck, that you sent me not long ago. It's absolutely fascinating. I would encourage every gun owner to read this. In fact, I'd encourage non-gun owners to read this, too, by David Frankel. It's called Coming to Terms, A Mass Shooting Survivor's Story. You actually wrote the foreword to this book. And David Frankel, what? He was a member of the Pettit & Martin law firm in San Francisco back in 1993. When there was a mass shooting there at that office, and some of those attorneys in the aftermath went on to form, what was it, the Legal Community Against Violence, right? And this was sort of an anti-gun, basically an anti-gun litigation firm. And
basically.
Right? And it still exists today. I think the name has changed, but it's still around, right?
Yeah, it's gone through three or four different name changes since it was formed in 1993. And you and I have both talked about it before. They're essentially the law firm for the gun ban lobby in the country, not just in San Francisco, but of course they're headquartered in San Francisco. But this mass shooting took place in a law firm in 1993. David was a lawyer working there. And he tells the story of how he tried to hide from this gunman as this crazy person went through, they never actually figured out what his true motive was, went through the office and killed people that were in the office, and David was hiding in sort of this closet, basically, and the only thing that he could find to defend himself was a corporate seal, a big heavy like a press that they used to put the seal on corporate documents. And he's hiding there holding this thing, and he starts to realize how vulnerable he is and how he can't really defend himself. But initially, he comes out and helps the lawyers in San Francisco, who all basically channeled their grief into forming the Legal Community Against Violence. He helped them do that. He was a gun ban advocate. He was a gun control advocate and a leader in the movement for a while. But as he went through a few other experiences, he came to realize that gun control could never work. As he realized his vulnerability, he recognized that he came to terms with the need to be able to defend yourself and the fact that government can't do it for you. And so the story of how his thought process has evolved from a gun control advocate to now a Second Amendment lawyer, fighting for the Second Amendment. It's a fascinating story about the evolution of his journey from the fear of being a victim and false hope in government to an advocate for the Second Amendment. So
yeah.
It's a must read for everybody. And give it to your liberal friend who doesn't understand what the Second Amendment's all about.
Absolutely. And by the way, I mean, this is 99 cents, the Kindle version at Amazon. So, you know, it's easy to access, download. But you're right. It is absolutely fascinating. And it's a shame, Chuck, because, you know, there are other stories, I think, that are similar to David's. I spoke with Dan Gross a few months ago. He was the former president of the Brady campaign. And somebody else who has now come out and said, listen, I'm not in favor of any gun bans. I was wrong to push these things. You know, he's had a bit of a change of heart himself. And, you know, it's disappointing to me that, you know, if you were to come out tomorrow, Chuck, I know this would never happen. But if you were to come out tomorrow and say, hey, you know what, I was wrong. Boy, I've been out here supporting the Second Amendment for all these decades, and, you know, I really should have been pushing for gun control. You would get calls from every broadcast news outlet. You would be all over the cable news networks if you wanted to. They would love that story. But when it's the other way around, when it's a gun control advocate who has all of a sudden said, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking and soul searching about this, and this isn't the way to go, the media is just not interested in telling those stories.
Right. It's pathetic. And part of that reason is, you know, the people closest to the issue are the ones who really know the truth about guns, the truth about the social utility of firearms, the fact that a lot of the narrative that the mainstream media pushes about guns not being valuable for self-defense, etc., is baloney. And so the folks who are actually in the trenches are the ones who know the truth, and that's why these guys changed, that's why these folks changed their mind. The paperback, by the way, is $9.99 on there. It's a more recent version. And the best thing about this is the proceeds, any profits that may come from this book, David is donating to the CRPA Foundation. So this is not a profit, you know, for-profit exercise for him. He's a believer now and wants to help the cause. And so if you buy this book, you help support the cause. With any profit that comes from it, goes straight to the CRPA Foundation, which is fighting for your rights in courts all across California and in fact the country.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, we could, Chuck, you and I literally could talk for hours about everything that's going on in California. So come back soon and let's talk about the latest gun show bans and some of the latest litigation you have going on there in the state. Will you do that?
I'm happy to. Anytime, whenever you'll have me.
All right. I appreciate it very much. Chuck Michelle, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our recidivist report, our good deed of the day. We'll start with the not-so-great story from Chicago, where a man on probation for robbery has now been charged with robbery. More importantly, a double homicide in the city's Chinatown neighborhood. Fox 32 reporting on this story. A 20-year-old man, just 20 years of age, already on probation for robbery, now charged with a Sunday double homicide. Two men shot to death when they resisted this armed robbery. Alvin Thomas now faces two counts of first-degree murder in the shooting back on February the 9th. 36-year-old Wai Bain and 38-year-old Wei Zong Zong were standing in the parking lot of an apartment complex with a 44-year-old woman. It was a little after 2 o'clock in the morning when a man walked up, tried to rob him. Woman complied. The men resisted, at which point the man fired multiple shots. Thomas arrested minutes later, about 50 minutes later, literally. He's in court on a bail hearing today. Fox 32 says at the time of his arrest, Alvin Thomas was on probation for a 2018 robbery charge. He was released on home electronic monitoring after posting a $5,000 bond. He pleaded guilty to the charge in July of 2019, and he was sentenced to 2 years probation for robbery. With credit for 319 days already served, while he was out on bond, he was charged with manufacture and delivery of cannabis. That charge was dropped the next month, according to Fox 32. So again, young Alvin Thomas should have been behind bars, but instead was out on the streets when he allegedly took the lives of two men in the Chinatown neighborhood. And tell me again about putting all these new gun laws on the books and not enforcing the existing laws that we have against violent criminals. Why is it, again, that you got so many politicians in Chicago that think you or me or the concealed carry holders in the city of Chicago somehow are the problem when they're letting violent criminals off with a slap on the wrist and probation for violent crimes? Yeah. Now we've got today's Armed Citizen story from Wayne County, Ohio. This is from the Daily Record, West Salem, Ohio. Tom Phillips got up Saturday morning, and his wife asked him, "Did you leave the garage door open overnight?" And he said, I don't think so. But the door was open. His wife said it looked like it had been kicked in. Tom Phillips said, "I got up, got dressed, got my pistol, called the Wayne County Sheriff's Office and said, hey, I think somebody's broken into my home." And then a couple minutes later, he saw a guy trying to get back into his garage. Phillips said, "I pulled my weapon up. I told him to stop, to get down on the ground." He said, "I held my gunpoint until the cops got there." Wayne County Sheriff's deputy arrived about 5 to 10 minutes later. Deputy handcuffed the suspect, identified as 37-year-old Michael Hoosier of Lima, Ohio. Hoosier charged with one count of burglary. He being held right now on $15,000 bond. He was allegedly in possession of property from several different nearby homes, including a neighbor's wallet, quote, an abundance of lighters, hand tools, flashlights, and knives. He also had a, quote, crystal-like substance, which deputies believe was meth, and a green leafy substance, which was suspected marijuana. He was also carrying a handgun, as well as ammunition. Todd Phillips says, quote, "I just protected my property, my family. That's about it." Deputies, again, who arrived and took the suspect into custody, recovered the gun, ammunition, suspected drugs. They were able to return most of the stolen property to the original owners on Saturday. He allegedly, Hoosier did, used a pitchfork to break a glass storm door, attempted to then break into the home itself. Ultimately, Mr. Phillips says he's glad the situation was resolved peacefully. And with the suspect in custody, he says, quote, when somebody breaks into your home, you kind of lose a sense of security. And it kind of gave me back a little bit of that security, knowing that he was apprehended. I imagine some security as well, knowing that you're able to protect yourself and your family. Now, our good deed of the day, Gilbert, Arizona. This from ABC 15 in Phoenix, Arizona. Officer Adam Walicki was called to a Walmart last Monday on a basically a welfare check. There was a woman who had been sitting in the Subway restaurant there in that Walmart for almost 24 hours at that point. So Officer Walicki came out, sat down, talked to the elderly woman. He said that she told him that she was talking with a man for over a year, sending him money by gift cards. And she had flown in from Illinois. And when she got to the airport, she had the expectation that she was going to be meeting a guy and having a relationship, as Officer Walicki said, a new start at life. So she got scammed. I mean, that's the long and short of it. She got scammed. There was nobody there to see her at the airport. There's nobody going to show up at the Subway for her. Officer Walicki said he decided he needed to help this woman. He said this could have been anybody's grandma. So he spoke with the woman's son, who was still there in Illinois. And Officer Walicki actually used his own money to purchase a plane ticket to get her back home. He said, I decided that was the right thing to do, to get her home so that she could thrive. And that would just be to take her to Sky Harbor, walk up to the American Airlines counter, buy her a one-way ticket to Chicago. She did arrive home safely. Son was there to pick her up at the airport. You know, the money that she lost, not likely to be recovered, but at least she is back home now with somebody who does care about her. And again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Officer Walicki in Gilbert, Arizona, we thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Now, just a reminder, as I mentioned earlier, we are expecting the passage or at least a vote on House Bill 961 in Virginia on Tuesday afternoon. We will have full coverage of that for you on Wednesday's Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, as well as a look at more of the day's top Second Amendment news and information, the New Hampshire primary results and what it means for gun owners. Are we, again, witnessing a Bloomberg surge on the left right now? Boy, I really hope not, although it's not like there's a pro-gun candidate out there to choose from. Thank you again for being a part of the program today. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Town Hall Media at YouTube. Also, you can subscribe to Bearing Arms Cam & Company on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. You can become a VIP member of Bearing Arms at BearingArms.com. Get exclusive access to commentary, analysis, and more. We certainly do thank you for your support. We thank you for watching, for listening, for spreading the word. And we'll see you tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company.